everybody, and welcome to Adjusted. I'm your host, Greg Hamlin, coming at you from beautiful Birmingham, Alabama, and Berkeley Industrial Comp, a WR Berkeley company. And I'm excited today to introduce another one of my favorite episodes. And this is a rebroadcast from a while back where we had the opportunity to talk to Wendy Goddard about bill negotiations. And this is one of the topics that I think gets overlooked quite a bit. And it's really important for people in the industry to understand is how bills are priced and how they can be negotiated. And what's the advantage of doing that? Because it is such a confusing topic. And so much of the time on the claim side, we're so focused on making sure we pay for things that are related to the claim and not pay for unrelated things that we may not pay attention to the importance of the actual bill negotiations that can go on, especially on these larger claims where there's multiple surgeries or catastrophic injuries. So I really enjoyed this time with Wendy. It was a peek behind the curtain in a part of the industry that I don't spend a lot of time. And so I hope you learned some things as I did as we share this episode again with you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Adjusted, a claims podcast for workers' compensation enthusiasts. I'm your host, Greg Hamlin, coming at you from Berkeley Industrial Comp and Sweet Home, Alabama. And with me is my co-host,
Claire Musselman, coming at you from Des Moines, Iowa, representing Continental Western Group.
And with us today, we have our special guest, Wendy Goddard, with Advanced Claims Review Specialists. Wendy, do you want to say hi to everybody?
Hey, everyone. I'm in Atlanta today. And yes, I'm with ACRS, and I'm excited to join you guys this morning.
So, Wendy, we are really glad to have you with us today. I know when we think about claims, workers' compensation claims in particular, we often focus on the injured worker and the injuries, which are very important. But another element that we want to tackle today was bill negotiations and how that whole system works, because it's very confusing. Wendy, if you could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the industry?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know anyone who gets into this industry on purpose. I have yet to meet someone who actually did it on purpose. I know we are working hard as an industry to encourage the younger generation to bring them into the industry immediately. But I happened upon this as I was looking to expand my career, and this brought together two of my my giftings and my experiences. In my previous career, I was the head I was the clinical head of a pediatric practice, and then I discovered I just didn't like being in four walls all day, so I headed out and moved into a business development role and in marketing and advertising. And this was a way that brought both of those histories together so that I could use all of my giftings and talents in a new role.
All right. So, Wendy, you've been here for a little while now. What do you think has been unique since you've been in other industry areas? What do you think is unique about the workers' compensation space?
One thing that I have been impressed by is the closeness of the industry, the personal relationships in the industry. Coming in as an outsider and never being a part of it, I didn't know how much heart and care and intentionality went into this industry and into serving the injured worker and into collaborating with each other to serve them well. It's a very small industry, and you get to know everyone very well. And you get to work with a lot of people in a lot of different capacities, but everyone seems to have the same desire and focus, which is to serve our injured workers well and to treat them to the best of our ability. And it's really neat to be a part of something that seems to be everybody's woven together, moving in the same direction. And it's a direction of positivity and compassion and a genuine desire to care for other humans. So that's been a surprise to me. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
That's excellent, Wendy. I feel the exact same way, and there are so many great people in the industry, and it is interesting that it's not a very big community when you think about workers' compensation, even across the country. You run into a lot of the same people frequently. I know for people who've been in the industry for a while, they understand maybe some of the pieces and parts of hospital billing, but I think probably everybody listening has gotten a hospital bill before from something that happened either to them or a family member and looked at the number and then saw what their insurance paid and were very confused. So I was hoping you could help explain today a little bit more about why hospitals bill the way they bill.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're so right. I can't think of how many times I've gotten that bill, you know, and it was either from a small procedure like an x-ray or even like when somebody's had to be hospitalized and the bill is for, you know, $60,000 and insurance says it's paying two and you can't and you're, you know, the rest of it is just going away and it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you've ever seen a large personal hospital bill, especially, but really even on the doctor's side, they're all reduced in a similar way. The reason why is because the major healthcare companies have the ability and have contracts in place and the leverage in place to reduce these bills dramatically. So the doctors and providers have been trained. They're trained regularly on how to code treatment. So they're trained on a regular basis and it's constantly being updated. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those ICD-9 books. They're huge. They're like, you know, three encyclopedias put together and they come out about every year, sometimes every two, but they're updated very frequently to include every possible code for everything that you could possibly be doing when you're treating a patient. And the reason why that they have to do that is because, you know, they need to recoup as much of the expenses as possible. And the insurance companies have, it's a game. They are going in and they're taking this bill and they're dramatically reducing it and paying a very small portion of it. So in order for the hospital's providers to be kept whole or to make enough money to cover the treatment, they have to code everything possible in there that is, you know, that is part of what's happening in that room. So if you've ever noticed that you've had like a $10 Advil, we all know that the Advil didn't cost $10, but there's a lot of other things built into that cost and it's going to be reduced. So that's kind of why you see the bills look different. I wish I had an explanation as to why this is the way our system is set up, but it is. And because the national system is set up that way, the workers' comp industry has to come in and figure out a way to play in that playing field without the same kind of leverages as general health insurance.
Okay, so that's not confusing at all. So let's add to that layer of confusion. And as we talk specifically into the work comp realm, can you help us understand fee scheduling?
Absolutely. So that is how the workers' comp industry has kind of answered in a basic way the need to reduce bills. Like I said, you know, the general health insurance companies, they have agreements in place, they have contracts in place, and they have a lot of leverage. And so they're reducing those bills based on those. Workers' comp does not have that. They do not have the same leverage. They do not have the same agreements. And so what the states have done, all but seven of them, they have put in a fee schedule of some kind, which basically says, you know, this treatment is worth X. Now, depending on what state you're in, depending on the type of treatment, depending on the type of facility, those numbers can vary. So it's not the same state to state. It is also not the same facility to facility. I know that sounds crazy because there's some states that if you treat in a trauma facility, it pays at 90 to 100% of that total bill charge, whereas their fee schedule may reduce it by 60% of the total bill charge. So it's just, it really varies within each state and then varies throughout the country. But essentially, the purpose of the fee schedule is to give a baseline to start from that bill should be paid on. Most states, some of them, I mean, I'd say a decent amount, have a decent fee schedule. And so, you know, the bill will come through. And if it's everything is applied appropriately within that fee schedule, it reduces it to a reasonable amount. But like we said earlier, there's seven states that have no fee schedule at all, which means that now those bills should be paid by law by 100%. And you have to think again, you're getting that same coding that is happening when a patient emergently shows up in the hospital or is, you know, has a surgery. That provider is not coding that bill differently because it's a workers' comp claim. They're coding it the same. So they're, you know, they're going to charge 100% of what they would charge and expect a very fraction percentage of from the large health insurance companies. They're going to do that for anything within the workers' comp industry. So, you know, for the non-fee schedule states where they by law have to pay 100%, you really have to have another option to reduce those bills. And that's negotiating. We can talk a little bit more about that.
So Wendy, you mentioned the fee schedule. So when you think about a hospital, I know your company, one of the things your company specializes in is hospital bill negotiation. And so why would a hospital accept less than the fee schedule if there's legislation that sets forth what should be paid? Why would they be willing to accept less?
So it's a complicated answer, and it depends on so many variables. I wish I could give a very just clean, this is why. But I can kind of give a little bit of vision as to why something could be negotiable. So like the example I used a second ago, in a state where a trauma pays out higher or a trauma facility pays out higher, what if you are the closest facility to you is a trauma facility? So you're taken there in an emergent case, but you're not really a trauma injury. Well, they're still going to charge you and you're still supposed to pay based on trauma, but you're not really trauma. So that's where technically the the state does have a law in place that they would have to pay that bill based on that trauma facility, but there's room to negotiate there. And if you have developed a decent relationship, which is what we really focus on with the facility, you can have some conversations around that to come to an agreement as to what they really need to be, to receive in order to be kept whole for that treatment. There's also other instances where, you know, the fee schedule may not reduce something adequately. Like I said, the fee schedule is something were put into place 10 years ago, and the fees have dramatically changed since they were put into place. So they may not reduce them adequately if they're based off of a percentage point or something like that. So there's room to negotiate there as well. It really depends on the type of treatment, the type of facility, and the state that it's happening in. But that's where our team comes in, and they're experts in looking at the bill and determining, is there room to negotiate here? And they know all those nuances. That's something that the adjusters don't have time to look into, or really the expertise in. That's not what they're doing on a daily basis. All of our negotiators are RNs, and they're certified in coding. So they have that expertise to kind of go in there and find that point of leverage.
You know, when I was a adjuster, I remember seeing a claim for a hernia repair, and it was like an $80,000 hospital bill, and we couldn't figure out why that was. And I think what it was is they had charged us for the equivalent of an entire box of mesh from the surgery. For a single piece. Do you ever see things like that where on the billing there's coding mistakes or something like that really drives up the price?
Yeah, and that is another aspect of what we do that is so critical. When the bill comes in, for anyone who's dealing with bills within this space, they come in and they're then keyed into a system and they're run through a bill review to apply your basic fee schedule, and it's going to identify things like duplicates usually, things like that, but it doesn't necessarily pick up on that they just charged you for a whole box, but they were only a single piece. Whereas a nurse could look at that and see the difference in that code and know, wait a minute, they only used one there. But someone who's not a nurse may just assume they needed the box. We don't necessarily know that. And if you're not certified in coding, you're not going to know the difference between those codes. They could literally be a point something difference in the code. And so you're not going to know from just glancing at that bill that code is inaccurate. So it's really important when the bills come in. And if it's a large bill, you can't do this on every bill. There's just too many going through the system every day. But there's, if it's a larger bill, it's always important to have some expertise, human eyes on that bill that are going to be able to look at it and look for nuances like that. Look for things that have been keyed wrong, things that that the code was applied inappropriately. We see rather frequently times where they will apply a code that you can't apply with the other code, but the system doesn't necessarily know that it's actually the same thing. So it's just a slight variance. And you know, that's done pretty regularly. They'll apply as many variances of that code as possible in hopes to get paid and recoup as much of it as possible. But when we're paying out a significantly larger percentage than, say, a major medical is, we need to make sure that we're not triplicate bill, paying on a particular code just because it's a slight nuance of that. Which is that takes somebody who understands coding, and not only understands coding, but understands how the hospitals work. So I've been a nurse on a floor, working with patients, and would recognize, wait a minute, we didn't need the whole box here. We used one.
Okay, so then would it be safe to say that the variances are not necessarily picked up on by an automated bill review type algorithm, but by actually having a human who has worked in that facility, who does understand all this, would pick up that versus like a computer software?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so for sure. We see it all the time because the software can only, it can only do so much. We have to rely on systems. We have to rely on computers. It's important to automate as much as possible. But when you're looking at paying out a large bill, so you're looking at a bill that's, five, six, seven figures, big hospital bills, it's really important to double check those and make sure, because whenever you get into a larger bill, it's because there's been a lot of treatment happening. So there's a lot of opportunity there for things to be coded that, like we just talked about, our nuances are very close and they shouldn't both be on the same bill, that a system won't necessarily recognize, because the rules aren't always hard and fast. You have to think about that. Treatment is different for every person. The shoulder surgery, what actually happens in that surgery is different for every single person that gets it. And so a nurse will understand that. A nurse will look at it and go, oh, I know why they had to charge this, this, and this, because this was the outcome of that surgery, or this is the injury going in, or this was the complication that occurred, whereas a system wouldn't necessarily know that. So it's really important to have somebody who has that expertise, not just on the coding side, but on the nursing side, the two combined, to be able to look at that bill and who understand it, and they can quickly identify these moments where you can say, actually, no, this doesn't apply, or they may apply legally. Like, it may be like, yeah, absolutely, that is completely applicable and it's done. But maybe the hospital doesn't need to recoup all of those codes that is actually a singular, maybe, or, a smaller treatment. Maybe they can recoup a portion of those and still be kept whole and profit. Obviously, they have to profit too. But, you need that expertise in there to know the nuances of that and be able to have conversations around it.
I've seen some of the same thing on the provider side as well, where, we talked about systems and how they can be used and the purpose of having a person look at it. I know when I was in a different state working for a different company, and we had a hospital that had an occupational clinic, and they had automated notes. And basically the notes they had set up was making sure that every visit was at a certain office level, which is the amount of time the doctor's spending. And we knew they weren't spending that much time there, but the system, because the notes were generating a certain way to make sure the codes would come out a certain way, was all interconnected. So it's such a complicated web to try to figure out what you owe and pay what you do owe and not more.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you see situations where you are able to reach a negotiated amount on a bill below the fee schedule, why is a contract important in that situation?
Yeah, so if you've been in this industry long enough, you've dealt with bills, especially on the adjusting side, you've probably seen some of the other practices that have been put into place over the years to try to mitigate the situation. I mean, obviously, there's been some overpayment over the years. There's actually, I was at a national self-insured show last year before pre-COVID. They had an amazing statistic. It kind of blew my mind. And I wish I had been prepared to record the moment. It was just put out there really fast, but it blew my mind. It was talking about on hospital emergent bills, the hospitals nationwide, their profit margin, want to get this correct, is from workers' comp. So their profit margin coming in from a workers' comp injury is at 19% of their profits come from the workers' comp industry. But their the actual number of patients coming from workers' comp industry was like 3%. That shows the big variance in the difference that the workers' comp industry is paying. So this was an issue, and everyone knew it was an issue. And so for, you know, people have been trying to solve this for a while. What happened was is that the kind of the standard way to do it for the longest time has been to apply an algorithm. Basically, you have, you know, companies out there who will take these large bills in, they'll apply an algorithm to it. It's all automated. And they'll basically say, you know what? We only think that this bill is worth X, whatever it is. And they send what they call a good faith payment, and they wait on the hospital to reconsider that payment. They wait on them to come back and see if they're going to fight it. What this has done is it's kind of it's created a whole nother monster, a whole nother issue for the industry to deal with. And then now they're having to deal with all these reconsiderations coming in. That costs your adjusters time to go back and figure out why this is being reconsidered, why they want more money, are they owed more money? It costs your analyst time because they have to go back and re-review the bill. So it's costing time, but then it's costing legally. You know, the you're having to pay legal expenses of, you know, fighting the larger reconsiderations. And then you're having to pay more on that bill. By the time you're done that going back and forth on a reconsidered bill, oftentimes you may as well just pay the bill in full to start with, because you've already lost so much in the reconsideration process, especially if it gets caught in what I call the churn, where it just goes through the process over and over. We actually had one just recently. It had been seen 4 times before it got to us, and it was just going through the churn. They just kept sending it back. No, we want more. No, we want more. No, we want more. And that's just every time. It's costing more and more money. The other side of that that's important to know is that that's costing the hospitals money. They're having to pay to go and seek out these bills. So we saw this issue. We saw this becoming an issue across the board, and it was really raising the legal costs and just the difficulty of processing these larger bills. And it was really upsetting the providers, to be honest with you. And you never want one of your injured workers showing up at the hospital and they see who that injured worker belongs to and they think, oh, it's them. Oh, they're going to give me a hard time. They're not going to pay my bill. You don't want that perception. It's not a good perception to have, especially in a small community. A lot of our communities, you know, farming communities, things like that, there's one hospital within 100 miles. You don't want them to not want to see your people. You want them to care for your people well. So we saw this becoming an issue. And when we developed the way in which we approach negotiating bills, it was to look at this from a completely different perspective. And say, with clinical knowledge, with the understanding of the coding, with a clinical background at like an RN actually having these conversations, then if you were to reach out to these providers, develop a relationship with them, you know, make them your friend, and then talk with them about that patient, about that specific situation, about the leverage that is in that bill that could help reduce it. One, you're far more apt to get a better settlement from them, because you always want to help out a friend more than you want to help out somebody who has basically been causing you a lot of trouble having to reconsider this bill over and over again. But then two, they're able to have a conversation on their level. So, you know, you're talking to a provider on their level. That is so respectful. And you're able to come to an agreement that makes sense to all sides. And then the reason why you want to get that agreement signed is because then it stops that bill right there. The provider signs it and says, yes, this negotiation we completely agree with, and we will accept X, and this bill will be closed out in full. Then our client is going to sign and say, yes, we will pay this much for this bill, and then they're going to make that payment, and then that bill can never be reconsidered. It's not going to show back up in 3 years and send somebody scrambling to go find some old records, and you're not going to have to, you know, get it stuck in a legal. I have a client right now who is a new client to me, and they brought me a bill that has literally been with legal and being fought in the system for 3 years. They have been back and forth on this bill. They have spent more on legal costs than the bill would have cost trying to fight this reconsideration. And in reality, if we had had a very, you know, simple conversation in a clinical manner, it could have been resolved, and they never would have had to go through all of that pain.
Yeah, I think we can piggyback off of that. We've had some that we get sued. They take them straight to court and file a lawsuit against us because of, you know, whatever has been kicked back from bill review or whatnot. And it really does create a less than desirable outcome, like you're saying, especially when it is these smaller communities. And you really have to put that emphasis on the relationships and how you want your people to be treated when they walk through the door. So you talk a lot about relationships in this. Can you talk a little bit more about how you guys really approach that and how you build the relationships within the hospitals, within your teams, et cetera? Because, you know, as you talked about, like this, and being in the workers' compensation space, we do have a lot of stuff is relationship based. So talk to me a little bit more about that and how you guys approach this from your clinical standpoint and within your teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I think relationships are everything. I think that's something that when our founders were putting this company together, they took from the industry, an industry that is so relationship-based. You look at it and you think, why are we doing something with our providers that is the absolute opposite and it's causing all this friction? Why not leverage relationships to achieve the outcome that we're all looking for, to save the maximum amount of money on these large bills, to keep the relationship strong with our providers so they care for our people well? And then honestly, like you were talking about a second ago, you know, the issues that come in when a bill does turn into a lawsuit, something that I've heard several people say is it's not just the issue with the perception with the provider that changes, but it's the negative noise within your office, within your team. I mean, you have the providers calling and harassing the adjusters, asking for things. They're sending these letters that have just, you know, very aggressive wording to them. That can change somebody's mood and somebody's day. Nobody wants that. That negative noise on both sides of the aisle, whether it be, you know, within your team or within the community and the provider because of, you know, some lack of payment, is nothing that you want to deal with on a regular basis. That's not fun for anybody. So we really looked at this and said, how can we leverage professionalism, expertise, and relationships to make an impact? And, you know, our team has spent, we've been in business for 12 years, actually, I guess 13 now. And so they spent 13 years developing relationships with providers all across the country. Because there's who knows how many, hundreds of thousands, I'm sure, we still get bills that we don't know anyone at that provider. Our team doesn't just send over something, a demand or an email or something like that, a fax. They actually call and take the time to go through that phone tree and find the right contact. And then, you know, get that person to engage in a conversation with them, get them on a more professional level or personal level even, so that they realize this is two humans having an educated conversation. And then they present, this is what we're here to talk about. And we're here to help you get paid in a reasonable amount of time and what you reasonably need to gather, but also protect our client from overpaying you and protect everyone from the mess that can happen in between.
I love that. I think that's really valuable and is very relatable, I think, from wherever we're standing right now. And it does bring a more positive outcome to, I think we all have that dreaded, oh, it's the bill people calling. Like, it doesn't matter where you're at in this sense, you know. And so that's just one of the things, like we actually, Greg and I were talking about this earlier, where like, it's going to be nice to everyone. And everyone has a job to do and how you treat everyone. So the respectful nature and the relationship building is very important. So when we're looking at, you know, like our industry, there are always like catastrophic claims and whatnot. And, you know, Greg's group has a little higher hazard than we do, but we encounter this too. When we are looking at like rehabilitation or acute care of some type of nature, how do you guys handle that? And how do you recommend, like, do you pre-negotiate rehab care, or how would one, what do we do in that space? Because I know we've seen cases where it's like $300,000 a month. And so we are paying out a lot of money on this. So where do you guys come into that space, and what do you recommend from the adjusting desk of how do you approach that and do it in an effective, but also making sure the injured worker is cared for appropriately and all of those things as well?
Absolutely. That's such a good question. And actually, I had an example of this come through today. So a lot of times what the adjuster will see when a patient is transferred or looking to be transferred to a long-term care facility or rehab facility or step-down unit is the provider will send over a letter of agreement, an LOA, and they'll say, you know, we need you to sign this. It basically says we're going to care for this patient. Well, what the adjusters aren't realizing sometimes is that there's an agreement for payment in there. So we had one come through today, and it said on there, for us to treat for X, Y, and Z, it has the orders in there, you're going to pay 80% of total bill charges. And so the provider is counting on the adjuster being like, yes, I got a discount. What they don't realize is that that 80% of total bill charges, that could be more than fee schedule. That 80% could be, they could have a lot more leverage to reduce that significantly. So we always say, don't sign those until you have an expert look at them. Let's look at what are they asking for on a daily rate? What is the fee schedule for that you know, area, and what it should be? And then, is there any leverage for any additional savings? So yes, we absolutely pre-negotiate those. And a good example of one recently, we saved $1,000 a day off of what they are requesting on the daily rate for a rehab stay. Well, if that rehab stay goes 30 days, that's a $30,000 savings. If it goes longer than that, I mean, that's significant savings. $1,000 a day is a big impact. And that was in a fee schedule state that we just happened to be able to have a good conversation with them about, you know, this is what we're needing, and this is, you know, how we're using it. And our nurses knew what to, you know, where their leverage was there and what they were asking for and how much could be considered reasonable. And they were able to come together with an agreement that was very impactful for our client in the savings realm. So in any kind of rehab, long-term care, even in a fee schedule state, it's always worth looking at it. In a non-fee schedule state or in a cross-state situation, which is another one that we see rather frequently, if somebody gets hurt on the job, but they want to go, say they're out working on site and they want to go to their home state to be treated, then 9 times out of 10, it's expected to pay 100% of that bill. And again, you know, we never want to pay 100% of any bill, because 100% of the bill is higher than what is standardly paid. So anytime you have a cross-state situation, by all means, that should be pre-negotiated. And another thing that I know we've done for actually both of your teams that has been really helpful is when we have those crazy injuries, the one where, you know, they're in Alaska and they out in the wilderness and they get hurt and then they're having to be transferred back somewhere, you know, in state, you know, on in the main area, and they're like, their home state is Missouri and they've got to get back there, and then they're going to be in this long-term care facility. There's a lot going on there to have them transferred and to get it done right and to make sure that they're cared for appropriately. So this is where our team can come in. We can pre-negotiate that air flight. It'll include the ground transfer to the airplane, the air flight to where they're going to, the ground transfer to the rehab facility. So it gets it all kind of, it helps logistically. It takes a lot of pressure off of that adjuster who's going, oh my goodness, how do I get this person from Alaska to Missouri? And then we reduce that cost significantly. And then on top of that, we can pre-negotiate that rehab facility. And in that conversation, they're making sure that that rehab facility can handle the level of care that this patient's going to need. It has happened that we have somebody referred to a rehab facility or a family member request a certain rehab facility. And then when we get into the conversation to negotiate it, we realize they really can't handle the level of treatment that patient's going to need. But a nurse would know that when they start to have this conversation. So it's helping on saving money, but it's also helping to assure you're getting the best care for your patient, for your injured worker.
Thanks, Wendy. That's really important, I think. And
because we do high hazard. We have people in all different parts of the country. And Alaska's one of them. So amazing. When people get hurt in places like that, they don't have nothing against Alaska. It's just they don't have all the same facilities there. So it can be a real challenge getting them the care they need, which often involves transportation, which is a big part of what you guys have been able to help us with. When you look at some of the challenges that come into negotiating hospital bills, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges that you face when you're trying to reach an agreement?
Well, these days, it's getting a hold of the right person because everybody's working from home. So it has been a unique challenge these days because you're not just calling a main line and getting transferred through. Now it's a big game to get to the right person now. But a lot of times it is finding the person who can impact that bill to the best of their ability for the, you know, for the maximum savings. So that's a big challenge. But then honestly, having that conversation, once you get them on the phone and you're able to have that conversation from a clinical perspective, once they realize that we are going to protect our client, we're there to protect our client, but we're respectful of them and of what they've done and of, you know, the what they need to operate as a facility, and that we are knowledgeable about what we're calling and talking about and not just, you know, trying to throw a number at them and hope that they'll take it, but that we can actually have that clinical, knowledgeable, expert conversation. It is so refreshing to the providers that they're much more apt to work with us. So I think that probably the biggest challenge is timing. Sometimes it, you know, we try to turn our negotiations around very quickly. There are some times when it's really complicated or when we have a hard time getting to the right person initially, that kind of thing, that timing can come into play. And we need to step back and look, you know, is this a situation that it's worth taking the extra time to save on? But on the large bills, a good example we had from earlier this year, it was pre-COVID days. I think it was early March. And it was a bill that was, I want to say $1.8 million for some infusion therapy. It was a significant amount of therapy. This bill came in and it took a long time to have the conversations necessary to finally get a settlement on this bill. But ultimately we saved them over $1 million. So it's, you know, some of the challenges are getting a hold of the right people and the timing. But as far as getting a settlement, once you get a hold of the right people and you're having a good clinical conversation and they recognize that you're knowledgeable and you're an expert in what you're talking about, usually it's very easy to get a settlement.
That's fantastic. You know, I think for me, Wendy, one of the things that really impresses me about your company and you as a person is just how you built relationships throughout the industry and the importance of that. And I think anytime we can learn how to work together to help these injured workers get back to work and get a good outcome for everybody involved, whether that's the hospital or the insurance carrier and the injured worker, it's a win-win for everybody. So I applaud what you guys are doing and hope others check you guys out and appreciate you spending the time with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you. We enjoy working with you too. So I appreciate very much the opportunity to come on and talk with you guys today. And we appreciate your support. And we really, one great thing, again, that I love about this industry is that we develop not just relationships, but friends. And I'm really happy to say that you guys have become my friends and we're able to take care of your injured workers together as a team.
Yeah, we appreciate you too, Wendy.
Well, that's it for today, folks. We hope you join us for our next podcast. Take care. We want to thank Cameron Runyon for his excellent intro music. If you are interested in adding some music to your life, please feel free to contact him. We will provide his information in our show notes.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you join us for future episodes releasing every 2 weeks on Monday. Thanks again, and happy listening.